You're listening to Raphael Epstein.
I'm very, very excited because we are going to talk about a film that I completely have fallen in love with. It's called Snowpiercer, but before we get to that, I greet with great excitement Josh Nelson. His blog is filmology.com. It starts with a PH. Josh, welcome.
Good afternoon.
We've both had the pleasure of seeing Snowpiercer. Someone's already sent me an arresting review on text. They are not impressed with it. I was. Josh was. Like all good post-apocalyptic films, it examines what happens when you remove that thin veneer of ethics and law that we call society, and they chuck all of humanity on a train. The press are at the back of the train. The rich people are at the front of the train. To give you a bit of a flavour, Tilda Swinton has a great role. She's got really bad teeth and funny glasses. She's got a great role. She's kind of the chief enforcer or propagandist. Have a little listen to her explanation to those at the back who've had the temerity to even answer back to those who forced them to live at the back of the train. This is how she puts them in their place.
In the beginning, order was prescribed by your ticket. First class, economy, and frail orders like you. Eternal order is prescribed by the sacred engine. All things in their place, all passengers in their section, all water flowing, all heat rising pays homage to the sacred engine. In its own particular, preordained position. I belong to the front. You belong to the tail. When the foot seeks the place of the head, a sacred line is crossed. Know your place. Keep your place.
Keep your place. That's Tilda Swinton apparently doing the voice of a nanny she hated when she was young. Josh, give people an idea of what the film's about.
Okay, so you said it's post-apocalyptic. The inhabitants of the Earth, this is said about 20 years from now, have tried to fix climate change unsuccessfully because they release an agent into the atmosphere which freezes all of Earth's people and kills them off, except for some lucky survivors who are on this train which is circling the Earth, called the Snowpiercer. And this is this kind of wonderful creation of sort of a genius engineer. But as you heard there, as Tilda Swinton points out in a very early scene in the film, the people at the back who are covered in grime and their own filth and the rat-infested kind of dredges of the train are stuck in there. And the rich and the wealthy are up the front and they try and have a revolution led by figures like Curtis, played by Chris Evans, in another great role. Like Tilda Swinton, he's having another great year.
He's Captain America, by the way, in the Captain America.
Yeah, I should have pointed that out. You know, this film reminded me a lot of the J.G. Ballard novel High Rise. So for those who've read it, this is an apartment building where those on the bottom rungs of the apartment try and fight their way up to take the top apartments, which are inhabited by the wealthier inhabitants. I mean, this is the same kind of social allegory really played out in a kind of an action film, guys, on a train which is circling a frozen Earth.
Yeah. And also not a typical Hollywood film. It's got a Korean director, and he's apparently a big-time Korean actor, one of the rebels, and it's got Korean government money, and apparently Korean government money, and I read filmed in Prague.
This is a multicultural film in every way. It's based on a French graphic novel directed by Bong Joon-ho, who's done a couple of really impressive films which got international releases, The Host and Mother. Yeah. American studio with the Harvey Weinstein, who he's had an ongoing battle with for the last 18 months to release his version as he intended it. Weinstein wanted to cut 20 minutes and have a voiceover, which, you know, if he'd ever seen the original Blade Runner, you know, doesn't quite work. I don't know why they keep trying to do this. But the cast is a combination of Yanks, people from the UK, Japanese, famous Korean actors. You know, this is a kind of a wonderful film in terms of its imagination. I mean, it is this strange hybrid between an action film and very much similar to a number of other Korean action films that we've seen over the last decade.
Blockbuster with a brain, I call it.
That's a really good term. And this is why I think it's confusing some people, because I've heard some criticism saying, well, it's not really realistic. I mean, they stop fighting and they talk halfway through some of the fight scenes. Like it's an allegorical film, and it's you know it's playing on this, but the production design is really incredible. I mean, having the idea of the conceit of the social kind of you know dynamic between the front and the back, but as they creep forward, we get kind of the kindergarten, and we get the you know the sushi.
Well, don't reveal too much, because that's what's beautiful about it. It's like I was thinking that both visually and plot wise, it's like peeling the layers off the onion, and as you peel off each layer of the onion, you go. I mean, I was actually going, oh, wow. Oh, wow. Now, I'm getting a few texts. I do want to... I'm getting Equal text. Snowpiercer, saw it last night, loved it, massive fan. Interesting idea of injecting the sulfur dioxide in the atmosphere to stop global warming. A few of you, though, saying it's terrible, the end didn't justify the story. Someone else, Snowpiercer is great, everything the reviews say. What I loved is that the production design gradually unveils itself, and the plot is also gradually unveiled. But like you said, it's a blockbuster allegory. What did you think it was? Was it trying to say anything?
Oh yeah, I mean it's not very subtle. It's not it's the idea of this as a social class commentary is not subtext. I mean it's as you heard, Tilda Swinton points it out to the audience at the very start of the film. But what I loved, I think it's a really sophisticated political critique in there. Not that you have to go in there expecting some kind of highfalutin idea. I mean it plays out as an energetic action film as well. But I thought the way in which it tries to riff on the idea of revolution is somehow built into a kind of capitalist democratic system is really quite intuitive in a way that other sci-fi action films like The Matrix aren't really as sophisticated. I mean, they start with a kind of sophisticated premise and then that sort of gives way to action. The thing about the action in this film, which I really love, which will appeal to kind of a more mainstream genre audience, is we don't get the same set piece repeated. The style, the tone of the action changes. I mean, the quality of the violence gets more and more sort of dark and somber as the film grows up, as the film kind of progresses. So it's a smart film stylistically, but look, it borrows a lot from Terry Gilliam, and I mean, not coincidentally, the John Hurt character, who's the wise elder in the lower class carriages, his name is Gilliam. So I mean, it's quite open about its references. You know, from a costuming point of view, from a sort of a style tonal point of view, I really love this film, and I'm a bit shocked that it's only playing at one cinema in Melbourne. In fact, even in some of the other states, it's only playing in single cinema, because I think this is a film that has an audience, or has a mainstream audience, mainstream audience appeal. So, and it's a film that also, I think, warrants a large screen viewing. I mean, the sound design, the visual design of this film is really great. And I thought the ending was spot on and does something quite different to the typical heroic action sort of narrative.
Look, I liked it. I thought it was complex. And I don't want to say too much because I was trying to think about how to describe this to people. But I love asking the question, if you could rip society to pieces and start again, what would you do? How would you set that society up? So it asks that great post-apocalyptic question, but it also asks if you led the revolution, who would be first up against the wall, and what would you do? What would you do once you begin to succeed in your revolution? What are you actually fighting for? And are you fighting to simply replace those at the top, or are you fighting for real change? And to wrap all of those ideas around, and they're not new ideas, but to wrap those ideas up in a well-acted, nice CGI, fantastic production design, and also just that simple visual idea. The whole thing's in a train.
Yep.
So they're constantly battling to put the camera in a new place as you travel down the train and encounter new worlds. So, no, look, I thought it was fantastic. If you've got a favourite train film, this has become my favourite train film now, but if you've got a train film worth mentioning, 1300 222 774 is the phone number. I did get the great pleasure of going on the revamped Orient Express in London, which was beautiful and actually had Tasmanian wooden panels in its compartments. But if you've got a favourite train film, you can mention any that you like. 1300 222 774. Even if favourite train scene in a film, 0437 774 774 is the phone number. A few of you saying, sounds like Tilda's reprising the White Witch role. She's much better in this than as the White Witch. I love it. And someone else, just with an interesting train story, backpacking 20 years ago in Zambia, I bought a first-class train ticket and then stood by helplessly as 50 police turned up and beat up with staffs those with no economy tickets. And they did it for no reason, according to this texter. So interested, your favourite train film, your favourite train scene, 1300 222 774 is the phone number. Any other thoughts to share on Snowpiercer?
Look, I think we've captured it pretty well. I think go and see it. I think this is a film that, you know, when I often intellectualise films, and that's, you know, part and parcel of what I do, but I think this is a film that works on a completely energetic, visceral action level. Don't go in thinking like you need a PhD to kind of understand or unpick this film. It's a film that is just sort of sophisticated action. I think and these are pretty rare. I mean, it's not very often now that blockbusters have brains.
Yeah. I was thinking very much that I've often been feeling at the moment the TV shows are like novels and the movies are like short stories. So even something like Planet of the Apes, that is another allegory, you know, it's where we project a lot of our fantasies and our anxieties onto the post-apocalyptic future. So they're essentially just great short stories. This is a fantastically well-told short story, fully rounded out, unpredictable, whole lot of elements that you wouldn't expect to see. So, yes, we're both recommending that one. I'm not so keen usually on making recommendations, but I'm just like Josh. I would slam this one into your recommendations box. Someone is texting in the War of the Worlds scene. I'm not sure I remember it. Train, War of the Worlds.
Isn't that in the background as Tom Cruise is driving off and the train explodes? Oh, no, the burning train passes them by as they're waiting on either sides of the crossing.
I don't remember. All I think of when I think of Tom Cruise and trains is it the first Mission Impossible when they're in the tunnel? And the really woeful scene with the chopper.
Oh, yes.
That's the real jump the shark yes. moment when the chopper goes into the tunnel.
Wow. Anyway,
Andrew's called from Parkdale. Hey, Andrew.
Hi, guys.
What's yours?
There's only one, Runaway Train.
Oh, okay. When's Runaway Train? Remind me.
When?
How long ago? Like Runaway Train's 90s?
Oh, 89, something like that, okay. Yeah.
It's actually quite good, isn't it?
Oh, well, you know, it was from a story by Akira Kurosawa who cooperated with the production.
I didn't know that. Right.
Produced by South Africans, the Golem Globus brothers.
Wow, you know your Runaway Train.
It was directed by a Russian and filmed astonishing filming, cinematography by an Englishman. And Eric Roberts' greatest role. You've got to really be a good actor to play someone so dumb.
look, I do like it. Runaway Train, your recommendation. Snowpiercer is what we're talking about. Called Snowpiercer because the world's freezing cold, so they have to pierce the snow, and it uses the snow as, well, that's where they get their water from anyway. Someone pointing out, yes, Snowpiercer, very delayed release here. Apparently you can already get it on the US iTunes store. I didn't know that, but I'd recommend the big screen experience. Absolutely love the Darjeeling Limited. I haven't seen that. Has that got trains in it?
That's the Wes Anderson film with the three brothers on the train going through India.
Oh, that's right. This too. Sorry, I haven't seen it, so I didn't know. The train scene in Dr. Zhivago, the huge Soviet locomotive in the forest with Strelnikov. I know someone who just thinks that's the best film ever made, actually. Someone else from Russia with Love, still my favourite Bond, climax on the train, indeed. Jeff Ringwood, that is the one I was trying to think of from Russia with Love. And Mick has called from Hoppers Crossing. Hi, Mick.
G'day, Russ. How are you going?
Train film?
Yes, mate. The Von Ryan's Express, I don't know if you're familiar with it, that POW escape movie with Frank Sinatra in the lead, and he is just at the end of the film, he's chasing the train as it's getting away, and he gets mown down by the Nazis.
Oh, sounds... Frank Sinatra made some good films, like From Here to... Was he in From Here to Eternity?
I was thinking...
Yeah.
I think he was, wasn't he?
The Man with the Golden Arm.
And the Man with the Golden Arm. Yes, yes, indeed. Tell me a bit more about Von Ryan's Express, Mick.
It was probably a little bit after that. I reckon it's sort of mid-60s-ish.
Right.
So the POWs are being transported. They take over the train and they're trying to escape and, trouble ensues. Yeah, and anyway, so he's the leader and at the end he sort of sacrifices himself for the others to escape.
Oh, of course he does, Mick. Of course he does. And Once Upon a Time in the West when Henry Fonda has his own train in that Sergio Leone film?
That's the opens at the train station. It's still one of the best opening scenes of all time.
That's extraordinary. That's a really beautiful train.
I've got a nomination for an undervalued train film. It's actually just called...
There are so many undervalued train films in the world.
It's called The Train. It's a 1964 film with Burt Lancaster, set in 1944. The Germans are trying to ship out all the artwork... all the stolen Jewish artwork that they're taking, and Lancaster has to lead a group of men to try and stop the train without blowing it up, without damaging it because of all the precious artwork on it. Really, really smart, wonderful film. Directed by John Frankenheimer.
Oh, right. Oh, Burt Lancaster. See, he did do more than The Crimson Pirate.
On 774 ABC Melbourne, you're listening to Raphael Epstein.
As usual, I can't keep up with your film texts. The first great train robbery with Sean Connery, says Andy. The Last Train to Frio, that's from Marg in Coburg. Back to the Future 3, which has a train scene. And my 13-year-old teenage self is blushing at the mere mention of the train scene with Tom Cruise in Risky Business, because I'm pretty sure I blushed in that train scene. But I don't know if Josh was embarrassed or not to watch... Dwayne The Rock Johnson in Hercules, the remaking of the classic, Josh. All I know is that he ate 8 meals a day and spent his life in the gym. So he looks the part.
Well, I think he spent more time on his body than the scriptwriters spent on the script.
Okay. We'll have a little listen to the... hopefully I don't need to familiarise you with the story of Hercules, but have a little listen to the trailer.
Remember the deeds you have performed... the labors you have accomplished. Are you only the legend, or are you the truth behind the legend? Now, tell me, who are you? I am Hercules!
Wow. I've seen the scene where the gigantic lion leaps at him. That looked good in the trailer.
Wow, it didn't look so good in the film.
Okay.
The visual effects are just one of the many problems I had with this film.
Well, look, the effects aren't even good.
No, then that's pretty disappointing if that's one of the draw cards. Look, the best effect in the film is Dwayne Johnson's body, which is pretty sublime. Unfortunately, they don't really do anything with it. I mean, it's one of those kind of frustrating things. You've got this guy who's got such an incredible physique, and with only one or two scenes, you see him tossing opponent soldiers' bodies, which they poorly CGI, so it doesn't even look particularly good. Look,
right.
The one idea that I think this film had, which it doesn't really explore it with any real depth, is an attempt to demythologize Hercules. So instead of Hercules the legend, they give him a band of companions. Instead of playing on the mystical world of beasts and hydras and all that sort of thing, they try and pretend that they actually don't exist. So there's the ongoing joke that centaurs aren't actually real, which doesn't give them much scope to play with, because they try and give Hercules his sort of traumatic backstory, but it's not really dark enough, and then they have this kind of awkward comedy which doesn't quite work as well. So the first hour of this film really plods along. The one thing, actually, the few things that made this film tolerable, apart from The Rock — I quite like The Rock, even though I think he's a bit underused here — is the band of companions. The actors and the companions that follow him around and embark on this adventure. There's John Hurt, is actually the evil sort of villainous king that he has to front up against towards the end of the film. Ian McShane. Rufus Sewell. What the hell happened to Rufus Sewell? Because he's really great in this film, and he's
right.
With a very poor script too. And Joseph Fiennes pops up. So they've tried to give this guy a kind of a decent cast around him, but the script's really weak. It doesn't feel like the film actually has an idea of what it wants to be. It wants to be dark. It wants to be an adventure film. It wants to be kind of seven-year-old adventure humor. And it ends up hitting this sort of limbo middle ground where it doesn't actually feel like it has any sort of artistic vision, which is probably not surprising because it was directed by Brett Ratner of the Rush Hour fame. Brett Ratner, who keeps complaining about the critics not liking his films and telling everyone that he really is a good director and his films make a lot of money, so therefore his films are good.
But they suck.
I don't think this film's going to make a particularly great amount of money. It's in 40-something screens here in Melbourne as opposed to the one that's in Snowpiercer. I'd go to the one that Snowpiercer's showing.
There you go. In fact, Mark's called from Cranbourne. Make it brief if you can, Mark. Have you seen Hercules?
Yes, I did. I've seen it on Wednesday with the preview that they had.
Yes.
I have to admit, I agree 100% with your guess.
Worst film ever?
Worst, not worst film ever. I've seen a lot worse, but worst film this year.
Worst film this year. Ouch. Wow. Okay. Look, the film we mentioned, Snowpiercer, is only on one screen. So the Nova?
Cinema Nova in Carlton.
And Hercules is on everywhere.
Everywhere.
And you know what we think, although I haven't seen Hercules. So, hey, maybe you need to eat a stack of pancakes as big as those eaten by Dwayne Johnson. Josh, thank you for coming in.
Pleasure.
Josh's film blog is filmology.com. That's spelled with a P-H.